And I can't think of a better way to start 2023 than to be with brethren, be worshiping God and studying from His Word. Clint asked me a few minutes ago, he said, "Do you want the lavalier mic?" And I said, "No, I'll just use this microphone that's up here if it's okay." He said, "Well, as long as you don't venture too far from the pulpit." I said, "Trust me, I'm not. I'm going to be hanging on for dear life with my well-scripted lesson, and hopefully we'll get through this okay this morning." Perhaps some of you, like me, watched some football this weekend. And those of you who are football fans have probably seen players and coaches on the sideline do this. They hold up four fingers, and that's to signify that it's getting to be the fourth quarter of the game. And the gesture is for the purpose of reminding the team that the game's almost over and they need to finish strong. When Cindy and I retired back in June and moved here, our brethren in Richmond and our co-workers were all asking us, you know, "How's it feel to be retired?" And my response was, "Well, I'm excited about having new adventures and experiences in life, but it's a bit sobering to realize that we're entering the fourth quarter of our lives." And I guess we're still a little bit in denial about that. And while we aren't quite as old as some of the members here, the reality is we are approaching our latter years. Lest we ever forget this, little reminders occur from time to time. For example, Cindy and I were invited to join a group of older Christians here who get together socially from time to time. I didn't think I was eligible for the group yet, but apparently I am. And I think the recent shot of reality for Cindy was when we were all at Clint and Rachel's home not too long ago, and she was summoned to gather and pose for a picture of the older women. Anyway, with some of those thoughts in mind, I thought today I would speak about aging. That is, you know, getting old. Our text for this lesson comes from Genesis 47, 6 through 8. And these are passages that relate the account of Joseph bringing his father Jacob to Egypt to be presented to the Pharaoh. And when they meet, the Pharaoh asks Jacob, "How old are you?" And there's various commentators that have speculated as to why Pharaoh might have asked this question. Some suggest that the long ages of the patriarchal family were truly exceptional, even during this period of time. But I suspect, though, at least part of the reason that the question was asked of Jacob was simply because the Pharaoh was curious. And I think most people in society today are also very curious about age. I'm really terrible at guessing people's ages by their appearance. Cindy's really good at it. I made a comment the other day about how young our next door neighbor's mother looked, and my observant wife noticed the Botox lips and said she's had some work done. And when we show photos of our children and grandchildren, people usually ask us, "Well, how old were they, you know, in this picture?" And when we find out someone's died, a common question is, "How old was he or she?" Jacob had lived a life of labor and sorrow, and I imagine his countenance and his demeanor suggested he was old. And from what I've read, apparently people in Egypt did not live quite as long as people in Canaan at that time. So the Pharaoh may have just looked upon Jacob with a bit of wonder and respect. In response to the Pharaoh, Jacob replied, "My years have been few and evil." Well, Jacob was 130 years old when he said this, and he died at the age of 147, which was relatively young compared to Abraham and Isaac. But from Jacob's response to Pharaoh, I think we can see that he understood that life is just a pilgrimage, and the pilgrimage is a short one. As I grow older, I've begun to have greater appreciation for the numerous passages in the Bible that speak of the brevity of life. 1 Peter 2:11 refers to God's children as sojourners or strangers and pilgrims. I'm reminded of that song we often sing, "This world is not my home, I'm just a passing through." Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verses 1 through 7, instructs us to remember our Creator in the days of our youth, before the difficult days come and the years draw nigh when we will say, I have no pleasure in them. And then several verses on down from that, we're reminded that the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. Job chapter 14, verses 1 and 2 reads, Man who is born of woman is a few days and full of trouble. He comes forth like a flower and fades away. He flees like a shadow and does not continue. James 4:14 describes life as being like a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Psalms 39, verses 4 and 5 has similar thoughts. It says, Lord, make me to know my end and what is the measure of my days, and I may know how frail I am. Indeed, you have made my days as handbreadths, and my age is as nothing before you. Certainly, every man at his best is but vapor. I did a little searching on the internet, and I found that the average lifespan of a person in 1900 was 46 years old for men and 48 for women. And this last year, 2022, the average lifespan of an American man, 73 years old, and for a woman, 79 years old. Psalms chapter 90, verse 10 says, The days of our lives are 70 years, and if by reason of strength, they are 80 years. But that doesn't really matter, because regardless of how long a person lives, life on earth is always going to be considered as fleeting. You know, we live in a very fast-paced world now, and I have fond memories of when things moved a little more slowly. I love the warm summers I would spend with my grandparents as a child, and we'd congregate out on the front porch as a family, just visiting, rocking in the chairs, snapping beans, and listening to the coal trains in the distance. You know, with all the technology we have today, we're in a very hustle-bustle society. And if life seemed to these writers of the passages we just read to be fleeting in such a slower age, think how much faster life flees from us in this jet age. So with some of these general thoughts in mind, I'd like to spend the remainder of the time this morning looking at three areas pertaining to the aging process. The first is, how should we view the aging process or getting old? Second, how should we act towards older people? And then finally, what pitfalls or temptations does growing old bring? When we consider how to view the aging process, we need to recognize that we're never too old to render a service to God or man. And I have witnessed so many people, including some relatives of mine, who in their advanced years lost all purpose and hope in their lives and appeared to be just simply waiting around to die. I had an aunt who used to live here in the Knoxville area. She was a diehard University of Tennessee fan. And as she requested in her will, she was buried in blue jeans and a bright orange Tennessee Vols sweatshirt. Aunt Sue had obeyed the gospel, but I remember as she aged, she was always complaining. Granted, she did have some health problems, but nothing so severe that it produced daily suffering for her. And I remember her telling me on several occasions how she just wished she'd hurry up and die. That's very sad. And I contrast that to watching my father die slowly of lung cancer and how he maintained such a kind demeanor all the way to the end. In fact, he seemed more concerned about me and my sister than anything else. I suspect that there are many people who, because of fear, have died 1,000 deaths before death actually comes. When I was in high school, I could not stand studying Shakespeare. But my English teacher always told me that the things we were learning would serve us well as adults. I didn't believe Mrs. Amos at the time, but she'd be very proud of me today because I just happened to remember something that Shakespeare said about death that ties into this lesson. He said, Cowards die many times before their deaths, but the valiant never taste of death but once. Now, I did a little internet searching this weekend and was looking at some of the interesting things and notable things that older people have done to contribute to our society. One of the things that came up was George Burns, if you remember that comedian, just seemed to never wind down. He was actively performing late in life, up until just before his 100th birthday. The oldest person to reach the summit of Mount Everest, Yochiro Miura, did so at the age of 80. Another record breaker I read about, Feja Singh, is the world's oldest marathon runner. He was still participating in marathons as late as 2016 when he ran in the Mumbai Marathon at age 104. Alfred Lord Tennyson wrote Crossing the Bar at age 80. Anna Marie Robertson Moses, better known to the world as Grandma Moses. She didn't start painting until she was 76 years old and continued to paint for years until her death at age 101. Nola Oakes became the oldest person to receive a college diploma at the age of 95. She went on to get her master's degree at age 98. Grace Hopper, read about a Navy admiral. She retired from her duties as a computer expert just 3 months shy of her 80th birthday. When I was growing up, our neighbor and my Boy Scout master, James Montgomery, he obtained his PhD. He worked 40 years as a university professor at Virginia Tech before retiring while simultaneously achieving the rank of Major General in the Army Reserve. When he was offered the rank of Lieutenant General in his 60s, he declined to take that promotion because he always had the desire to go to law school. He went to law school in his late 60s and practiced law until the age of 94 when he retired last year. And we've had older presidents such as Joe Biden and Ronald Reagan. You may remember that famous response that Ronald Reagan gave when he was asking the debate with Walter Mondale about whether his older age would be a consideration. He said, "I refuse to make age a consideration of this campaign. I will not, for political purposes, exploit my opponent's youth and inexperience." And even Walter Mondale laughed at that line. And there's many other examples I could offer, but the point is we should never use age itself as an excuse for laziness on our part. You know, it's been said you're as old as you feel. And I admit that sometimes after a strenuous day working in the yard, I feel like I'm 90. Usually, though, I feel like I'm 10. My wife will probably tell you I usually act like I'm 10. But I'm reminded of the joke about the man who was looking at himself in the mirror, and he commented to his wife, he said, "Honey, I'm getting old, fat, bald, and ugly." And his wife's response was, "Yes, but at least your eyesight's still good." You know, certainly the frailty of our bodies and our health may place certain limitations on us, but age is a quality of mind that's reflected by our dreams and our hopes and our ambitions. If these qualities have died, we will be old, regardless of what age we are. On the other hand, if our hopes and our dreams and our ambitions are alive, we'll be young despite what our aching bones and our white hair and our failing hearing may tell us. As Christians, we should not feel old. We do have hope, the hope of eternal life with God. And when our bodies begin to fail, it helps us put things in perspective. No longer are the cares of the world important. It helps us to focus on and long for being with our Heavenly Father. No matter how old we are, I believe most of us would have to admit that we've probably wasted a lot of time in our lives. And as I reflect back on my life, there's certainly some things I might change if I had to do it all over again. There's certainly ways I could have spent my time better. But rather than worry about what we could have done in the past, we should endeavor to do the best we can now and in our latter years. In fact, in Ephesians 5:16, we're told to redeem the time because the days are evil. The second area I want to examine for a few minutes is our attitudes towards older people. This is where you young people in particular better pay attention, especially you folks in my Wednesday night class, because I want you to know how to treat me as an old man. All right, a few years ago, I went into Great Clips to get a haircut, and this elderly lady came in with her daughter, and the hairstylist met them as they entered, and I immediately noticed that the stylist was speaking only to the daughter, asking her several questions like, "How short would your mother like to have her hair cut? Does your mother color her hair? Does your mother normally get a shampoo?" And finally, the elderly woman piped up and said to the stylist, "Why don't you ask me? It's my hair." And I thought to myself, good for her. You know, we need to be careful that we don't talk to old people like they're children, that we don't dismiss their ideas, exclude them, or patronize them in other ways. Just because a person isn't mobile as they used to be or can't hear as well anymore doesn't mean that they aren't still intelligent. I think the Bible shows very clearly that we should have a special regard and respect for the aged. Again, there are many passages we could refer to, but I'll read just a couple this morning. Leviticus 19, verse 32 says, "You shall rise before the gray-headed and honor the presence of an old man and fear your God. I am the Lord." This act of rising before the aged not only showed respect for the elder person, but it also was another way of showing reverence for God and submission to Him. 1 Timothy 5, verses 1 and 2, discusses the treatment of church members. It says, "Do not rebuke an older man, but exhort him as a father, the younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, younger women as sisters, with all purity." You know, each stage of life has its own advantages. The young have their youth and vigor. The aged have their wisdom. Proverbs 20, verse 29 says, "The glory of young men is their strength, and the splendor of old men is their gray head." Now, older people, especially older Christians, can be a great source of knowledge and experience for others. They have the wisdom that's obtained through age and experience. That's why the older women are instructed to teach the younger women, Titus chapter 2. And I often think of some of the older Christians that I was close to as I was growing up. Many of them were like grandparents to me, and they served as wonderful examples. I relied on their wisdom. I remember Sister Graves, who was a walking encyclopedia. She just knew so much about life, and she had a perky disposition all the time despite her declining health. Then I remember Brother Wilson. Every time I'd ask him how he was doing, his response was, "Richard, I've never had it so good." He said that until he was quite old and feeble, despite how he felt. At the congregation in Richmond, where we came from, Sister Norma continued to serve as a courageous example, attending services well into her 90s. Brother Eva attended services regularly well into his mid-90s. He was a retired Army colonel and a Silver Star recipient. And I remember, even in his mid-90s, he would look me right in the eye and give me the firmest handshake every Sunday morning as we greeted one another. To this day, he still attends worship service and Bible classes online. And Cindy and I get kind of tickled at times because he has his video screen turned on all the time when we have online worship. And he'll hang in there the best he can for someone his age, but occasionally he'll doze off in class. And we'll see him on the screen, that head go down. And then all of a sudden he'll just pop back up. And we'll say, "Brother Eva's back." But, you know, what a wonderful example. I just think many people his age would even not even try to make the efforts, you know, to worship with the saints anymore. But his effort certainly does not go unnoticed, and it serves as an inspiration to everyone. And I'll mention one other example. Brother John Nosker, he was an elder at the West End Church in Richmond, Virginia, when we first moved there in 1988. And I served as a deacon at the congregation. And I bring him up because he kind of took me under his wing and was instrumental in my continued development as a Christian and as a deacon. And also I mentioned him up because we discovered when we moved here that Brother Nosker was Pam Collier's uncle. But I often relied on Brother Nosker for feedback when I was teaching or preaching. He and his wife Elizabeth sat up front, and if you ever said anything he didn't understand or he disagreed with or he wasn't sure about, he'd scrunch up his face like this and give you that strangest expression. And that was instant feedback for me. But John was not only one of the shepherds of the church, but I was just so impressed by his influence in the community. He was a senior vice president at the Federal Reserve, and he later worked as a bank consultant after he retired. But even when he was in his 80s and I was in my 30s, he would just randomly call me up at work and he'd say, "Let's go to lunch." And he'd drive downtown, and what impressed me so much about him at his age is he seemed to know everyone in Richmond, regardless of their age. And each time we'd go out for lunch, we'd go to a different place. And whenever he'd walk into the door of whatever restaurant it was, there'd usually be some young 20s waitress going, "Hi, John." It was just really amazing how he connected with people of all ages. And he was a really good example of letting his light shine in the community wherever he went. But despite having access to the wisdom of older people, the Bible has plenty of examples where young people rejected the good advice of older, wiser people to their detriment. For example, Joash, who became king of Judah as a seven-year-old, had Jehoiada to serve as his advisor for nearly a half century. With this godly influence around him, he chose wisely and he served well. But later, evil advisors persuaded him to do wrong, and he caved to their influence. Another example is Solomon's son, Rehoboam, who ill-advisedly adopted a harsh policy toward the northern tribes, which succeeded and formed their own kingdom of Israel. 1 Kings 12:8 says, "Rehoboam rejected the advice which the elders had given him and consulted the young men who had grown up with him who stood before him." Now, I'd like to spend the last part of our lesson today covering a few dangers or pitfalls that we should guard against as we get older. And certainly, these are problems that could be applicable to all ages, but perhaps they're a bigger problem for older Christians. And the first danger to guard against is getting the false notion that years alone bring wisdom. Job 32:7 gives us an example where Elihu was speaking to Job. And Elihu, out of respect for Job's age, waited for Job and his friends to speak first. Elihu said, "Age should speak, and a multitude of years should teach wisdom." In other words, Elihu expected that he'd better listen to Job, since Job was older and more likely possessed more wisdom. And while this is usually the case, unfortunately, years do not always teach wisdom. Some people seem to be unable to profit from their experiences. Gray hair alone does not solve problems. Young people need to solicit the advice of wiser people, just as Elihu did. But we have to be careful that we don't accept false information just because it comes from an older person. I once knew of an elderly preacher in a congregation who was simply imparting inaccurate information from the pulpit and attempting to bind his opinions on everyone. And in this particular case, it was a sad situation because I honestly believe this man was suffering from dementia and becoming senile. But I remember one day he told me point blank that it was sinful to attend a high school football game. And he didn't offer any explanation as to why he held this viewpoint. And when I asked him why he felt this way, he said, "Because it just is." And this man, as a result, lost all credibility with me. I'm afraid everything he said after that from the pulpit kind of went in one ear and right out the other. But this incident with this preacher reminds me that as older people, we also have to recognize when it is time for us to give up certain activities and let younger people take up the torch. So whether it's, you know, giving up driving because it's no longer safe for us, or in this case, stepping down as a preacher since cognitive impairment was impacting his ability to accurately present God's word. Younger people, such as our children, can advise us on such things, and we need to listen to them and give their input due consideration. Older Christians also have to be careful not to heap unsolicited advice upon younger people, especially in matters of opinion. We parents and grandparents are the world's worst at this. We're the wisest people in the world. We're experts on everything from child rearing to finances to politics. So we need to be careful there. A second similar pitfall that we need to avoid is to get the idea that there's honor in just longevity. Honor comes from service instead of longevity. Quality, not quantity, is what's important. Now think about Methuselah. Here's a man who lived to be 969 years old. However, as far as we know, he never accomplished anything noteworthy during his many years. At least nothing that was noteworthy enough to record. On the other hand, his father Enoch walked with God. prior to Lucille Ball's death, I remember an interview I saw with her on television. And as you older folks may recall, during her latter years, she attempted to make a comeback in a situational comedy. And the show wasn't as successful as her early shows like I Love Lucy. And as a result, the network quickly canceled it. But I thought her comments in this interview with regard to her comeback attempt and the new show were very interesting. And basically, she said she hoped that the new show would do well because she wanted to accomplish something new. And she went on to say that although appreciated, she was kind of tired of receiving all the Twilight Awards for her contributions in the past. She realized that she needed to keep achieving and not live on the glory of past accomplishments. The third problem, which may strike older Christians, is unbelief in self or lack of confidence. As we grow older, we sometimes think our abilities decrease. And true enough, our type of service to God may change over time. When I was in college, there were a couple of Mormon missionaries that had been to my door several times, and we had chatted some, but it was obvious that we weren't getting anywhere. I lived in an apartment, and in the unit below me lived who I considered to be an old lady at the time, a woman who would regularly get drunk, and she would bang and sing on her piano through the night, sometimes until the sun rose in the morning. And I really felt like I probably wouldn't see these missionaries again after our fruitless discussions. But one day, here they came once again, riding their bicycles, parked them in front of my apartment, and they came up to my door. And when they knocked on the door, I answered and I spoke to them once more. And finally, I just said, you know, I really admire your zeal, but the bottom line is I don't believe in modern day revelation. And this time they gave up, but before they left, they asked me if there was anyone else in the building that was home, because most of the people in my apartment building worked during the day. And that's when I must confess I did something that was really mean. I told them, yes, there was a lady downstairs that was home, and I happened to know that she was intoxicated at the time because she had, in fact, been hollering and banging on the piano all morning long. So I told the missionaries, yeah, I think the lady in the apartment down below me is home. And so they stepped into the hallway and went down and started speaking to her. And I also stepped out into the hallway because I just had to see how this was going to go down. Well, the woman came to the door, and within about 2 minutes, she was crying buckets of tears. And I heard her say, she said, I'm just an old woman. It's no use talking to me. I'm a drunk, and I'm going to hell anyway. And these missionaries, they tried to tell her what we've been talking about this morning, that, you know, she could still be of service to God, even at her old age. And one of the young men said, you know, you can serve God by telling other people about your experiences and your battle with alcoholism, and you can go out and share the word with others. And I'll never forget her response. She said, young man, I'm 73 years old, and if you think at my age I'm going to begin riding a bicycle, you got another thing coming. And with that, she shut the door. Well, God does not expect us to ride bicycles necessarily or do anything else that's beyond our capabilities. For example, we had members in Richmond that used to mow the lawn at the church building. And there came a time when physically they couldn't do it anymore. We had song leaders who had to give up song leading because they would be short of breath. But when life brings changes like this, we need to look for other ways that we can serve the Lord. Maybe it's writing letters to visitors, visiting, calling, or preparing a meal for the sick, praying for those that have special needs, or just giving some good advice and encouragement to younger, struggling Christians. Maybe it's volunteering to teach a children's class that Murray talked about this morning. There was a sister in Richmond, Sister Bonnie, who, because of an urgent need with a lot of urging from everyone, decided to teach her first children's class in her early 70s. And she went to it, got on the internet, learned things, and she is great at it, and it's her passion now. So I think we need to remember that when God's on our side, we can accomplish much more than we ever imagined possible. A fourth pitfall that goes along with this idea of lacking confidence in ourselves is the idea of limited usefulness. You know, some Christians quit working for the Lord because they feel that whatever service they're accomplishing can be better accomplished by a younger person. You know, if anything, retiring from our secular job should mean that we have more time to spend on spiritual service to God and to benevolent service to others. I hope everyone here really appreciates the many talented brethren that we have among us who are willing and are able to serve in various capacities. And you know, with all the talent we have in this congregation, both young and old, it'd be very easy for me, perhaps even tempting, to sit back in my retirement and let others who are so much more talented do all the work. But God expects all of us to use and grow our talents to the best of our ability as we have an opportunity to serve Him. A fifth potential pitfall older Christians need to guard against is having feelings of entitlement. You know, some people, when they get older, feel like they've done enough in their lifetime. That is, they've paid their dues. And worse yet are those older people who just sit on their laurels, pat themselves on the back for things they've accomplished in the past, only to loaf during the present. And certainly there comes a time when older people should retire from their livelihood or their secular jobs. We work hard for that retirement at age 65 or whenever. However, that doesn't mean we retire from the Lord's work at 65. We cannot grow weary in well-doing. A sixth trap to avoid falling into is unhappiness or developing a sour, fussy disposition. You know, Cindy often tells me that I can be negative sounding in my verbal dialogue at times, and I am truly a happy person, but I do tend to verbalize worst-case scenarios in a lot of situations. And I think that's a product due partially to my law enforcement and military service, where it was my job to be prepared and to contingency plan for worst-case scenarios. But as Cindy has pointed out to me, when I verbalize negative thoughts, it can drag other people down who have to hear it. Our son once told me to make sure I didn't turn out into the proverbial old man who was always telling the neighborhood kids to stay off my lawn. A life that's consecrated and devoted to God is going to guard against this danger. 2 Corinthians 4:16 tells us that as the physical man weakens, the spiritual man will become stronger. But don't forget what we read earlier in Ecclesiastes. The person who forgets God will see the evil days come and the years draw nigh when he will say, I have no pleasure in them. And that's why it's been said that the devil has no happy old people. If we allow the disappointments and the heartaches and the obstacles of life to transform us into cynical critics and grouchy grumblers, then you can be assured that the devil's going to be on our trail. I saw these types of complainers every day at work. These people were resistant to new ideas and changes. They grumbled about every little thing which deviated from the good old days. I remember when I was in the Marine Corps, I grew tired of hearing some people talk about the old Corps and the way things used to be. And yet I often found that these people who did the most complaining and the ones that had all the answers were usually the last people to volunteer to do the necessary work to make things better. And unfortunately, in the past, I've encountered a few individuals in the Lord's church that could just bring everyone down with their constant complaining and fussy disposition. Still another potential pitfall as we age is one that I've become aware of, and that's boredom and poor time management. As we age, we need to stay busy and engaged. And I've already discovered as a retiree that it's easy to sleep in too late and to watch television all day. Before you know it, the day's flown by and little has been accomplished. It's important to maintain a schedule and a routine that includes regular study of God's Word, prayer, and staying involved and engaged with other Christians. And then the last and most important thing we must guard against is unfaithfulness to God. As our time on earth comes to a close, we ought to be able to say with great faith, as the writer does in Romans 13:11, now is our salvation nearer than when we believed. There's perhaps no greater tragedy than to see an older Christian denying the faith by word or deed. Being faithful for so many years and then being overcome by Satan. Being near to home and yet lost. Surely that couldn't happen to our older, mature Christians here at Oak Ridge, could it? Well, we could speak at length about what the Bible says concerning falling from grace. But I'll illustrate that point with a story that hits home with me because it involved one of my family members. My uncle was 65 years old. After 44 years of faithful work in the Lord's church, including service as a deacon and an elder, and never missing his service, he woke up one Sunday morning and announced to my aunt that he wasn't going to services anymore. He told her that he thought about it and concluded that he was an atheist and he always had been. My uncle kept his word for many years, not stepping into that church building a single time since making that Sunday morning declaration. My father tried to call him. He wouldn't take the phone calls. And prior to this incident, my uncle and my father had been the closest of brothers. But for the first year after this happened, my uncle would not even let my dad come in his house. My father experienced many sleepless nights over this, but he kept emailing my uncle. And we kept asking ourselves, how could this happen? My uncle was not receptive to teaching at all at this time. My aunt concluded her husband had become mentally ill, but we saw absolutely no signs of this. Somehow, Satan had gotten a foothold in his life and weakened his faith. And all we could do was pray for him and just keep emailing him. But prayer works. And the happy postscript to this story is that 2 years before my uncle passed away in his 80s, he repented and came back to the Lord. And I know in retrospect, he greatly regretted the many years he wasted while he was unfaithful. Paul talks about running the Christian race. As runners, we need to set our sights on our goals, press forward towards the finish line. And as we near the finish line in our lives, that's not the time to coast. It's the time to give that strong kick to the tape. It's not how we begin the race, but how we finish that counts. And before we conclude, I'd like to digress for just a minute here and just say that every day I observe older members in this congregation working so hard to serve the Lord. It's such an inspiration just to see some of you get here and to struggle in the door and the way you contribute in various ways to the work here at Oak Ridge. I think God has blessed us with the composition of the members we have here. You know, having older Christians in the congregation is something we should not take for granted. Several of the places where Cindy and I have worshipped in the past were made up primarily of college students and young military personnel. As a result, the congregation suffered at times from a lack of maturity and a lack of leadership. But what I want to say to you older Christians here, that is those of you that are older than me, is just simply thank you. Rest assured that your labors are not only pleasing to God, but they're an encouragement to each and every member here, particularly the younger members. You know, as I spot more white hair and I watch my waistline go out while my hairline goes in, I think about getting old. And sometimes I have to admit it's a bit scary. But it shouldn't be if we have faith. I remember one day when my father and I were tossing a football around in the front yard and we were commenting about sore muscles and getting old. And during the conversation, he told me something I thought was rather profound. He said, "Richard, getting old isn't really so bad if one considers the alternative." And then when he got in his 80s, he would say something I've heard some of you all say, "You know, Richard, this getting old thing isn't for wimps." I think we're all aware of many people in this congregation who suffer daily due to afflictions of the flesh that are brought on by aging. And I suspect there's probably other members here who suffer gracefully in silence. Sometimes I think, though, that these afflictions are for our benefit so that we don't get so comfortable with the things of this life, but instead look forward to the eternal bliss of heaven. None of us knows what the immediate future holds, but we know the God who does. This 4 fingers that I see during football games is going to be a reminder for me every time I see it now, because I know that I'm in the 4th quarter of my life. But even if you're young, you may be in the 4th quarter of your life as well. We don't know. So we need to be faithful and busy for the Lord so that we'll be prepared for the judgment. And if we serve the Lord all the days of our lives, we will truly grow old gracefully and will be found faithful and receive that promised gift of eternal life in heaven, a place where age is no longer a consideration. Proverbs 16:31 reads, "The silver-haired head is a crown of glory if it is found in the way of righteousness." As we close this morning, let's appreciate our older brethren. Let's respect them. Older Christians, let's try to live in such a way that younger Christians can look up to us as role models. And let's all avoid those potential pitfalls and temptations that come with aging. That's the lesson. The Lord's invitation, we know, is extended 24/7. But we don't ever want to close this service without giving you a formal opportunity to respond if you should be subject. As you reflect on these things, what is your spiritual condition? Have you entered the Christian race? And if not, we'd be happy to assist you this morning by helping you, putting me on in baptism this very hour. And as a Christian, are you on course? Are you progressing strongly towards the finish line? Are you satisfied with your spiritual growth and maturity as you've aged? If not, perhaps some self-examination reveals that some changes are in order. So if we can assist you this morning in any of these ways, please make it known by coming forward while we stand and sing.